Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Across the radio, across the UK, on DAB, online, and on your DAB, smart speaker, and on your
the Independent Republic of Mike Graham,
on Talk Radio.
If you enjoyed that, be sure to catch the whole show 10 to 1, Monday to Friday.
Good morning, welcome to the Independent Republic of Mike Graham, right here on Talk Radio. It is Friday the 13th, ladies and gentlemen, and there's already some strange things happening. I came into the office this morning, and the sun was blazing through the windows. It was absolutely amazing. It was so bright, we had to close the blinds in order to be able to see what we were doing. Now, darkness has descended, and it's very gloomy, and it's very awful, and it's very horrible. It sort of reminds me of what's going on in Downing Street. You walk in one morning, and everything's happy and rosy and everything in the garden's beautiful, and then suddenly they're all knifing each other in the back. Well, I know that they do that quite a lot, but they seem to be doing an awful lot more of it lately. There's some very, very odd things going on down there. It looks like the pooch inside the walls of Downing Street goes on unabated, with the Prime Minister now doing what he's told on an hourly basis by the kindler, gentler brigade, who have so far managed to shoehorn Dominic Cummings and his press chief, Lee Kane, out the door. As I predicted yesterday, it would seem Boris Johnson's fiancé, Carrie Simmons, is firmly in charge of the clattering train. After all, who else could get rid of the evil genius and his communications henchman in one 48-hour period? But if you're expecting everything to be now sweetness and light, I've got some swampland in Florida to sell you. And just 6 minutes ago, the Prime Minister of this country, in the midst of a coronavirus, when the whole country is actually locked down, has tweeted out about some marine area, some part of the world 17 times bigger than Britain, which apparently we've saved for the fish. Well done, Boris. Top man, Carrie Simmons, is very clearly in charge. 0344 499 1000. We'll take the temperature of the Westminster bubble with the Independent's political commentator, John Rentall. We'll also hear all about the horror of the Yorkshire Ripper, who died from coronavirus this morning. Former Fleet Street editor Neil Wallace is going to join us. He covered the serial killer's trial in 1981. Sutcliffe, one of the worst serial killers in the history of this country, murdered 13 women that we know of, but it could have been many, many more. Coming up later on, we'll be joined by Olivia Utley from The Sun with her take on the big stories of the week, including that awful John Lewis advert. Kevin O'Sullivan also here with news of three big shows coming up this weekend. And as ever, we need to hear from you as well. We'll continue to put pressure on this government to do something for families who are suffering in this country because they are unable to see their elderly relatives. Tell us your stories and tell us how you are faring in this second week of COVID restrictions. 0344 499 1000. We'll bring you up to date with the new travel rules as well, which for once are actually being eased in some parts of the world. Lisa Francesca Nand will tell us about that. Because it's Friday, it's the return of the Perrier Awards, and Marta Balogun after a brief lull thanks to the American election last week. You're listening to me, Mike Graham, on the fastest growing radio station on the planet. It is, of course, Talk Radio.
Mid-morning with Mike Graham. Talk Radio.
Now, if you were Boris Johnson and all around you was being sort of ripped apart, and as you've not planned really to do, lots of people who came into Downing Street from the Vote Leave campaign now seem to be going back out the door thanks to a rather sort of interesting pooch by your fiancé, Carrie Simmons. What would you do? Would you try to get out there in front of it all and tell everyone that actually you're in charge and that basically the government is doing terribly well? It's doing a great job of handling coronavirus. It's doing fantastically well getting the R rate down, getting the number of infections down, getting the number of hospital admissions down, getting the death rate down. No, Boris Johnson has just tweeted this. I'm delighted that the United Kingdom has now protected more than 4.3 million square kilometres of the world's ocean. With the announcement of Tristan da Cunha's new marine protection zone, we have helped to protect an area of ocean 17 times the size of the UK. Well, brilliant. That certainly made my morning. Let's talk to John Rentall, a political commentator at The Independent. John, a very good morning to you.
Good morning, Mike.
Well, I mean, that was not the tweet I expected from the Prime Minister this morning, but I suppose we should be thankful that he's doing something to clean up the oceans. I mean, what about coronavirus?
It's the new kinder, gentler, greener Boris Johnson.
Yes.
Reset that we've all been looking forward to. I do think he does have a chance now, actually, to reinvent himself slightly. I mean, one of the problems he had with Dominic Cummings was that Dominic Cummings did go to war with just about everybody,
yeah.
Journalists, civil servants, Remainers, the establishment, making the government's job much harder. And I think we might be entering a slightly calmer period. And of course, I do think you've got to accept the effect of the vaccine breakthrough. I think that has changed everything. I think that's made it possible to imagine a post-coronavirus future. And I think Boris Johnson's looking forward to that.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's no question there's been some decent news knocking about for him this week with the announcement of the vaccine. And also yesterday, I thought, quite importantly, with the lifting of quarantine coming from quite a lot of very important countries with some quite important links with the UK. You know, it almost felt as though, to me anyway, that there was suddenly something you could look at and go, well, that could be the beginning of the end of it, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, all those people who think that Boris Johnson's useless and that he'd be gone by Christmas have underestimated his staying power. I mean, you remember that Barack Obama aide who called him a shape-shifting creep on
Well, no, Twitter. Surely not those nice, kind Democrats. Surely not.
Yeah, but the point is he may be a creep, but he's also a shape-shifter.
He's also our creep. And we won't take any lessons from the Americans about what sort of nasty politicians they've got.
Well, and also, you know, everybody was saying what a disaster it was that he didn't get on with Barack Obama and that Joe Biden would be horrible to him. And yet, you know, he was the first European leader to take the call.
Well, I did find it very, I said this the other day, I did find it very amusing that before the call happened, everyone was saying, well, of course, Boris won't even be in the top 10 of people he calls first. And that's a terrible slight. And then when he was the first one, everyone said, oh, it doesn't matter what order the calls come in.
Well, absolutely. I mean, you can't write him off. Boris Johnson is a shape-shifting creep, but he's very good at adapting, changing his position. He'll be able to do a reshuffle of his ministers. Now he won't have to just promote vote leavers. He can actually promote on merit, so he's got a chance to get the government into better shape. I mean, obviously, number 10 will still be a nest of vipers, still be chaos in there. But I think Dominic Cummings' departure will allow Boris Johnson to move on to another phase.
Yeah. Cummings, of course, says that he was always going to leave in January. And if you go back to his written piece, you would have remembered that. But, of course, nobody remembers that he said that. And he might as well have said he was leaving next week, because nobody ever believes anything that anyone says they're going to do in politics, because more than likely they never do it.
Yeah, no, I mean, obviously, he will always present that as something that was bound to happen. And we knew it was bound to happen. I mean, we didn't think that Dominic Cummings was likely to stick around. In fact, it's surprising that he stuck around so far. I mean, the big mistake, I think, was not to go at the time of the Durham flit. But
I suppose you'd rather not go under a cloud, which that would have been. I'm more surprised in a way that he didn't go at the end of January when, you know, we had done what they said they were going to do, which was effectively leave the European Union.
Yes, I mean, that would have been a good time. But no, I think it would have been a better time for Boris Johnson if he'd gone when the Durham flit came to light. I think that was the time. Or, I mean, because then Boris Johnson would have looked good. I mean, it wouldn't have done Dominic Cummings any. Mm.
But doesn't that then suggest, John, that Boris is not actually changing anything inside of Downing Street, but Carrie Simmons is changing it for him? Because if he really wanted to look good by getting rid of Dominic Cummings, why wouldn't he have done it then? Why would he do it now? I think the only reason he's doing it now is because his hand is being forced.
Well, I'm not sure how much of an influence Carrie was on that. I mean, there were reports yesterday of a row between Boris Johnson and Dominic Cummings, which seems to have been the final straw. But yeah. I mean, I think that...
Yeah, but I mean, that would have been because Carrie's been whispering in his ear to get rid of him.
Yes, but other people have been too, I think. So I think that's a general...
Yeah, but he doesn't have to spend as much time with them as he does with her. I was trying to think of a way of putting that without sounding crass.
Yeah, no, it's not. It's not great, and it doesn't make Boris Johnson look like a strong and decisive national leader. That's true. But again, you mustn't underestimate him. I mean, he's a survivor, and he may well survive for a long time yet. I mean, you know, obviously the next election's miles away, And who knows what will happen. But I wouldn't bet against him.
No, I wouldn't either. I don't think he's a bit like Donald Trump. You know, you never know what's going to happen next. But here's the other thing, though. It looks as though whoever came up with the idea of hiring Allegra Stratton has basically sort of brought in the old Trojan horse, which is now detonating all over the place.
Well, that's right. I mean, apparently it was Lee Kane's idea.
Brilliant.
Lee Kane, the director of communications, who is, you know, Dominic Cummings' junior partner, thought that it would be a good idea to have White House style televised briefings, but didn't appear to have super forecasted what would happen to his own role as head of communications in that scenario, because Allegra Stratton is obviously going to be a very, very important person in the new setup.
But isn't it a great sort of lesson in politics? I mean, you and I, probably you much more than I, really, have been steeped in this stuff for many years. And you can never expand too much. You can never kind of be too sure of yourself. You can never be too important to make the most horrendous gaffe, which then leaves you completely exposed and out of a job.
Yes, well, that is absolutely right. And the other political law is never create an important position without knowing who you're going to fill it with.
Right.
That was the mistake Tony Blair made when he created the directly elected mayor of London, because didn't occur to him that one of his great enemies, Ken Livingstone, was in a pole position to take that job. And, you know, Lee Kane seems to have created this hugely powerful position of prime minister's spokesperson without considering who was going to take that job and what effect it would have on him.
And also looking at all of the players in this whole kind of soap opera, as it's being termed, and it is a bit of a soap opera, it's incredible how connected everybody is. And I know people have done, you know, these sort of flow charts. Channel 4 the other week did this whole thing about how many vote leave people are actually working in government and how many are in sort of top level jobs in Whitehall, how so many of them are married to people that seem to work at the Spectator, which seems to be like the TARDIS. Everybody seems to work at the Spectator, you know, and it seems remarkable that they all know each other. And there's all these internecine kind of, you know, daggers being thrown from one group to another group, and some people have dinner together, other people don't. I mean, can you imagine walking? I mean, I've been in some Fleet Street jobs which were a bit like this, where you walk into the office in the morning and there's nobody there that's on your side, so nobody talks to you.
Let's not go into your employment.
I'm sure the independent's much more inclusive than that. But, you know, I've worked at some places which have been pretty brutal, to be fair.
Yeah, no, but politics is like that. And politics, you know, is always at the top. It's always going to be a sort of network of personal relationships, of people who know each other and trust each other and then fall out with each other.
Yeah.
That is absolutely how it works and how it always works. And the people who are really good at politics, such as Boris Johnson and Tony Blair, are really good at managing those interpersonal relationships. Now, you wouldn't have thought that Boris Johnson was actually good at that kind of stuff. He's not as sinuous as Tony Blair. Tony Blair was always very, very good at managing relationships and allowing people to think that he agreed with them. Mm. Boris Johnson's more chaotic and gives this sort of bumbling buffoon act, but actually seems to get away with it. I mean, do you remember when he sacked, you know, his best friend, Sajid Javid?
Yeah.
As they were mates, their children knew each other, and they all got on in one happy family, and yet Boris Johnson just knifed him one day and replaced him with somebody else.
But is there a danger here as well, John, though, that the ordinary voters out there in the big wide world, particularly those who loaned their votes to the Conservative Party in December, are thinking, this is not what I care about. I don't give a monkey's about whether it's Lee Kane, who I'd never heard of until this week, or some other bloke or some other woman who's called Allegra. You know, I don't really give a stuff. All I want is to see Brexit getting done. All I want is for the coronavirus to be sorted out. And otherwise, I'm never voting Tory again. And I'm getting a lot of that on, you know, social media, people calling the show as well.
No, I think you're absolutely right. And I think there will be Tory MPs who will be glad to see the back of Dominic Cummings, because he was a lockdowner. He was somebody who wanted to shut down the economy in order to control the coronavirus. But if he's just replaced with Carrie Symons, who wants to shut down the economy in order to achieve net zero carbon, then that's not going to be much of a gain for some elements of the Tory party.
No.
It's not a message that you can imagine going down particularly well in the Red Wall either. I mean, you know, I've spoken to a lot of Green Tories who say, oh, well, you know, even in the Red Wall, people want their children to have the jobs of tomorrow building
That's rubbish. Off, that is absolute rubbish.
Offshore wind turbines, but it's not necessarily a political message that's going to be easy to sell.
No, I mean, I would tell your friends, the Green Tories, that this is why the Tory party is no longer considered to be conservative, because it's full of these maniacs who want everyone driving around in electric cars and cycling everywhere. I mean, that is not what the bulk of this country wants, I can assure you.
No, well, I think that is an interesting question as to whether Boris Johnson could pull that off, because, I mean, he always has been something of a Green Tory. And if there's going to be more of an emphasis on that, more of a sort of push towards net zero carbon, then that's going to hit a political resistance point. It's probably before the next election.
Well, if they don't unlock the economy, it's going to be net zero everything. Never mind net zero carbon. It's going to be net zero money, net zero jobs, net zero mortgages, net zero savings, net zero, you know, the world.
Yes, and that is going to be a very difficult message for Allegra Stratton or anybody who has to speak for the government to sell. And I do think that they're creating a rod for their own backs with this televised daily briefing.
Yeah.
But Allegra Stratton will suddenly become the most important person in the government, apart from the Prime Minister, and will attract an awful lot of attention. People will want to know what she thinks about absolutely everything. Yeah.
Well, I mean, it gives all sorts of opportunities to all sorts of people to take a pop at him on anything that's going on. You know, like, for example, every time anything happens, like when there's an Extinction Rebellion demonstration, when there's, you know, somebody gets arrested for something, when, you know, there's a terrorist act that goes on. You know, almost any. I mean, there's a daily news briefing. There's daily news.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, for a prime minister who's actually proved quite good at staying away from TV cameras, unlike Tony Blair and David Cameron, who would always be in front of a camera as soon as anything happened. You know, Boris Johnson's approach has been rather difficult, different. He prefers to sort of stay out until he's ready to say something.
Right.
He's going to have a televised spokesperson out there every day.
If you and I were there, you can imagine the situation where you say to Allegra Stratton, what does the Prime Minister think about that? And she says, oh, we haven't spoken about it. Oh, what? So you don't think he thinks anything about it then? So why haven't you spoken to him about it? You know, it just goes on and on.
Well, that's my point. I mean, she's going to have to speak to him. Part of the reason why her appointment caused such disruption in Number 10 was that she insisted on being answerable directly to the Prime Minister herself.
Right.
Which is quite right, because you can't go on television and speak for the Prime Minister without knowing an awful lot about what the Prime Minister thinks and without having spoken to him recently and without having, you know, without speaking to him all the time. Mm. And that will change the power dynamic in Number 10 and in ways which we cannot yet foresee.
Yeah. I mean, you can just ask him every day, you know, does the Prime Minister still have confidence in the Chancellor? See what he says every day for the 365 days of the year. He's bound to slip up at some point, and so is she. John, a pleasure to speak to you as ever. Thank you very much indeed. John Rensell, Chief Political Commentator at The Independent. The ins and outs of what goes on, the toings and froings of Downing Street may not interest you at all, but I think it is interesting that Boris Johnson has now somehow turned his back on the people that got him in to Downing Street, has turned his back before Brexit is done properly on the people that got him through Brexit, and has now somehow cozied up to this kind of green lobby where he's tweeting out about some far-flung part of the Pacific Ocean that he's apparently saved for the fish. I mean, I'm sorry, that's not what the public of this country want.
Mid-morning with Mike Graham. Talk Radio. The Independent Republic of Mike Graham on Talk Radio.
Welcome back to the Independent Republic of Mike Graham right here on Talk Radio. Let's talk now, though, to Neil Wallace, former Fleet Street editor, former Fleet Street reporter, Fleet Street executive, a man who's seen an awful lot of things, done an awful lot of things. Neil Wallace joins me now to talk about the Yorkshire Ripper. Neil, very good morning to you.
Good morning, Mike.
Now, I think you, like many people, will probably have woken up to the news that the Yorkshire Ripper has succumbed to coronavirus this morning and felt not one pang of sorrow for him.
Absolutely not, no. There's no sorrow for the demise of this creature, really. He was a monster. And there is simply no other way to look at it. There will be families across north of England who will find it very difficult not to actually be celebrating. He left, I think his final tally was officially about 13, There is nobody that I know who knows anything about this case, including me, who knows a lot about it, who doesn't believe that that figure is much more likely to be in the 20s.
Yeah, I mean, you cover the
20 innocent women.
Yes, and you covered the trial, Neil, in the days when there were those were massive events, weren't they? Because it's hard to imagine, I think, for people now, and a lot of people listening to this won't have remembered that time, but it's hard to explain how big an event a trial like that was back in 1981.
It was a completely staggering event, actually, Mike. I was actually based at the time in the north. I was covering the story of his crimes, and then after his arrest we continued digging into this story for months and months afterwards, and then I went to the Old Bailey, and it, as you say, I've never been to anything like that before. I've never seen anything like that before. It was, in a way, an immense piece of theatre. It was absolutely hushed. It was intense. It was every second of it was gripping and fascinating. And you were hearing these astonishing stories, particularly from, you know, forensic experts and, you know, from detectives who were piecing together how he actually tracked down and got hold, you know, was able to destroy the lives of these poor, poor women. And there is this little nondescript bloke, as I said in my tweet earlier this morning, he was completely nondescript little bloke, sat in the dock, looking around, interested, but not greatly. And it was just, I mean, it is classic with serial killers, of course, but it was so hard to imagine that this creature sat there. You wouldn't look twice at him in, on a bus, and he had done all this carnage.
Yeah. And I mean, a fascinating story in terms of the way the police finally caught him as well, because again, a bit like a lot of these cases, it was a sort of a stroke of luck more than it was anything else, wasn't it? Because he'd been arrested, or at least taken in several times by the police, and never actually charged with anything. I don't think he actually ever was arrested, but he was questioned about 4 months apart for about a year, wasn't he?
Oh, yes. As you rightly say, Mike, it was a classic example of how there was this massive nationwide police hunt. They invented new computer systems. They did this, they did that. But it came down to a police sergeant's hunch in a city, Sheffield, where he'd never hunted before, because that's what Sutcliffe did. He hunted victims. He would go on the prowl trying to find someone he thought was vulnerable that he could then attack. And he was arrested by ordinary beat bobbies who were patrolling and checking out a well-known site for prostitutes. And they simply thought he was another customer of a prostitute. But a sergeant just had a sixth sense that there was something else about him. And they took him into questioning, and he was apparently fine. He was just a punter, as it were. But the police sergeant, I believe, went back to the site, and he discovered hidden there a hammer, and it was a ball peen hammer, which is a specific kind of hammer, and that's his police instincts kicked in. And the thing is, Mike, when they confronted him pretty much on a bluff and said, "It's you, isn't it?" He said, "Oh yes, it is." He absolutely never denied it. He rolled over it, and he was, Some argued at the time he was quite relieved to be caught, actually.
Yeah, I mean, serial killers have always fascinated people as well. Newspapers have always been fascinated by them. The big stories in America that we're seeing now being turned into kind of, you know, Netflix documentary series and all of that. I mean, this is a guy who then also, when he went into prison, he was in the sort of the mental wards for a long time, wasn't he? And he was considered to be someone who never really showed any remorse for what he did, and seemingly was quite proud of it.
Well, I think that's right. I remember my newspaper at the time, on the day the jury was going to come back, the headline was "Mad or Bad." Sutcliffe actually was both. But the judge sent him to Broadmoor, where he was for many years, despite great protest from many people, because they did not accept that once he was medicated, because he was basically a paranoid schizophrenic, he could not be back in the prison community. And it took 20 years or so before he was put where he should have been, which was in a proper prison.
Yes. And one of the reasons why he died was that he had become a Jehovah's Witness and he refused to take any kind of treatment for coronavirus, right?
Good.
Yeah. Well, good. I mean, certainly no point in wasting the resources of the NHS, really.
Yes, absolutely. Why anybody would have to look after him, I don't know. I mean, he actually, once he ended up in the prison system and ended up in the care of the state, as it were, he became a celebrity. Mm. And he lived like a celebrity and effectively insisted on being treated pretty much as a celebrity behind bars. Hundreds of women would write to him. Dozens of women offered to marry him. Many women would want to go and visit him and did. And amongst them, incidentally, was the woman who was his wife at the time he was carrying out the murders.
Yes. It's really extraordinary the way people react to it, isn't it? Because it is, as I say, I mean, I often wonder, and I thought about this morning, whether it would be the same now if it happened now. I mean, in a way, I'm not sure that it would be the same. But I think, as I was saying, to try and explain what a big story this was, what a big deal it was, that it was kind of all-consuming. It was everywhere. It was all over the television, all over the newspapers. The families were speaking, you know. I mean, I at the time, I had a friend who was at university, not far from Sheffield. And I remember she used to tell me that they were living in terror until he was caught, because you just never knew, if you heard footsteps behind you when you were walking home, whether it was him.
Quite right, mate. I covered those areas. I went into Leeds. I went into Bradford, the towns around there, when this was going on, after murders had happened. And it was quite literally, the terror was palpable. If you were a female, you were terrified. Mm. And particularly in the university areas, and they would go around in groups. They wouldn't go out at night. I mean, these poor students, the poor women of these areas had to impose a sort of self-imposed curfew on themselves because they were too scared to be out. Mm. And that's why because his initial victims, I mean, he is known to have killed prostitutes. His initial victims weren't prostitutes. They became prostitutes, Mike, because... or he targeted prostitutes, rather, because they were available.
They were the only people out and about, yeah.
Was women. Mm. So, you know, his earliest victims, some of whom they've never actually been technically able to link in, were simply ordinary women walking about their daily business totally legitimately. And it was only because of the terror that he engendered that eventually the only women he could hunt were the women who were forced onto the streets, which were either drug addicts or prostitutes or both.
And did anybody ever get to the bottom of why he did it and why he hated women to such an extent?
Well, there were two elements to it, I think. He had a very, very turbulent upbringing involving a mother that he enjoyed, who he adored, who was completely subjugated by a very domineering, bullying husband, Sutcliffe's father, who then dominated and terrorised his children. And it was thought at the time the seeds of it came out of that, really.
Yeah.
He was a paranoid schizophrenic.
Absolutely shocking story. And for the families, of course, it will all be coming back to them today. So... I guess for some people, they'll never get over what happened.
Never. Absolutely never. There are scores of children of his victims. And as I say, don't forget, Mike, there were far more than those he pleaded guilty to. Mm. There were far more victims than there were on the charge sheets. well into their 20s, their children, their grandchildren, who they have never seen, who they've been cheated of, their grandparents, all will be feeling a mixture of grief, pounding grief, about what their loss has been for all of these years. Relief as well that he is finally dead, because what happens is his presence keeps the story alive and keeps the pain alive. But there will be many, many who will be hurting rather than delighted this morning.
Yes, I think that's right. Neil, thanks very much indeed for those memories. Thanks for joining us. Neil Wallace, former newspaper editor, covered the Yorkshire Ripper trial, which was, I can't tell you how big that was at the time. I mean, for those people who don't remember the Yorkshire Ripper, and there are many of you listening, I'm sure, now, who were not around, or you were children probably when it was going on. I mean, in 1981, this was one of the biggest stories, not only of the decade, but of the entire century, because, you know, serial killers are thankfully very few and far between in this country, but he was one of the worst, and a monster is probably too kind of a word to use for him. Don't forget, we are live streaming here on YouTube, on Facebook and on Twitter. We're going to take some of your calls coming up. We're talking about Boris Johnson, the moves going on around Downing Street, inside of Downing Street. It looks as though Dominic Cummings' era has coming to an end. Lee Kane is going to be leaving next month as well. It's all going on. We are, of course, Talk Radio.
Across the UK.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Mid-morning with Mike Graham. Talk Radio.
Now, let's say a very good morning to Olivia Utley, Deputy Leader Writer at The Sun. Olivia, how are you?
Hiya, good, thank you.
Very good to see you. Now, what on earth is going on within the walls of Number 10? Because it's turning into a bit of a soap opera, isn't it?
Yeah, it's amazing. The funny thing is, we don't really know what it's about. It all just seems to be about personality clashes. So Lee Kane doesn't get on with, you know, Carrie Symons doesn't get on with Lee Kane. Allegra Stratton, who's the new PM spokesperson, doesn't like working with Lee Kane either. Cummings will only stay if Lee Kane's there, so he's decided to go. And it's all a bit of a mess, and it all seems to be about people's egos. Why Carrie Symons is involved is a bit of a mystery. She's the Prime Minister's fiance, but what say does she have? She's not elected. So that's a bit odd. But yeah, it's a complete mess and it's quite fun to watch. I'm loving it.
Well, it is quite fun to watch, but you do wonder whether any of these people realise that actually, they are hired and employed at the public's expense. They are hired and employed to do the bidding of the electorate. They are hired and employed to work for the government. And it's not really about whether they don't fancy having some foie gras together.
Absolutely. It's just completely ridiculous, the whole thing. As you say, it's a soap opera, which is fun if you're a bit bored of coronavirus news, but not great for the country. And as you mentioned, we're in this really crucial couple of weeks for Brexit, and everyone's just throwing their toys out of the pram because they don't get on with so-and-so.
Yeah, I mean, it's almost as if they can't handle any good news, because universally speaking, even if you're not that keen on the idea of getting a virus, getting a vaccine, which hasn't been properly tested, which some people have expressed, you know, doubt about, you would still say it was pretty good news that a vaccine is coming sooner than we thought. And yet this government has managed to turn that into a negative story about the infighting.
Yeah, it seems that, I mean, from the beginning, it feels like Boris Johnson just is... So, I mean, apparently he absolutely hates confrontation. He's a lover, not a fighter, it seems.
How's that going for him?
Well, exactly. That's how it's been allowed to sort of get to that. So he tried to keep Lee Kane on, and he tried to keep Carrie happy. He tried to keep everyone happy. And it's all sort of blown up in his face. Because at some point he should have just decided which way he wanted to take his number 10 operation. There's sort of Lee Kane, Dominic Cummings route, which they're sort of hard men and they want to get Brexit done and they've got a very clear vision of what they want to happen. They're not kind of soft around the edges. They don't do the sort of, you know, touchy-feely stuff, which is obviously much more up Carrie Simons' street. And she would want number 10 to be going in a completely different direction. And they're just two very different ways of running a government operation.
And it's quite worrying, isn't it, that his top three tweets currently on his Twitter account, the first and the third are about climate change, and the middle one is about Scotland getting into the Euros. And you think, well, haven't you got anything more important to tell us than that? Is that it?
Yeah, exactly. All of those environment tweets seem a little bit like Carrie's got a gun to his head. I mean, maybe I'm wrong.
Well, I don't think you are. I mean, that is the perception. And perception is often, you know, fact before anything else happens. And certainly it seems as though if you're replacing Dominic Cummings and Lee Kane, two people from Vote Leave, with Allegra Stratton, who's almost certainly a Remainer, and Carrie Simmons, who may indeed be a Remainer herself, I don't know. You know, it doesn't look that great for the populace and for those people who voted for Brexit to get Brexit done, particularly in the North.
Yeah, that is very true. I mean, at this stage, I'm not sure how much truth there is in the idea that sort of Carrie and Allegra are working together to try and stop Brexit. I think it's more that just there's such a mess. We don't really want this mess at the heart of Downing Street while we're trying to get this thing over the line.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think anyone's expecting them to try and stop Brexit, but what it could result in is a softer form of it, which is what a lot of other people are worried about.
Perhaps. I think it's more likely that if there's just this chaos and the Prime Minister can't concentrate on what he's supposed to be doing, it's quite likely we just have a very messy Brexit. I'm not sure if it's soft and hard as much as sort of clean or a bit of a mess.
Yes.
And I just think Boris was Foreign Secretary, and he was divorcing Marina and his personal life was in complete disarray, and he just became completely useless. And it feels like the same thing's happening again. Mm. You know, everything kind of slipping around him. He can't keep control of his personal life, and so his hold on the country is slackening, and we're just in quite a sort of chaos at a time when we all really need to be, you know, eyes on the prize.
No, quite. I'm not sure he's been concentrating on anything for quite a long time, actually. I mean, that's the sense that I get.
Yeah, I mean, I always come back to the idea that he just is so wiped out after having COVID himself and after just a year. I mean, apparently Marina, his former wife, was his sort of intellectual backbone. He talks about everything together. She propped him up for 30 years or however long he married for. And I don't think Carrie quite fulfills that role for him. So he's lost Marina. He's lost, you know, he is in a quite bad relationship with his children, by the sounds of it, or at least he was a few months ago. He's got this new baby. He's got this very difficult woman, by the sounds of it, in Carrie, who just tries to make his life quite complicated by the sounds of it. And he just sort of can't concentrate anymore, and he doesn't really have the backbone himself to be able to be able to do what he's got to do now. But yeah, I'd agree. I just don't think he's really concentrating.
Yeah. Are you one of those who thinks that this is the sort of beginning of a change of direction, though, in some ways, and that it might lead to a change of personnel in the cabinet as well? Because if you're going to say you don't really want the old-fashioned sort of hard man, shouty approach, then you might look at people like Matt Hancock and say maybe it's time to get somebody else in to be the Secretary of State for Health.
Would we call Matt Hancock shouty? I think he's a bit too soft around the edges.
Well, no, I think he comes across as very cold to me. He comes across as a guy who's kind of not exactly got anything with the country's best interests at heart, rather than just fixing everything.
Interesting. Yeah, I see what you mean. And I think it is quite possible that there's a big reshuffle. I think, honestly, I feel like this is Boris's kind of last-ditch attempt to kind of save his premiership, which I know sounds kind of ridiculous given that he was elected with a stonking majority less than a year ago, but it really has been such chaos ever since that it does sort of feel like trust among his backbenchers has slipped away so fast that he's now just desperate to kind of save his premiership by kind of getting a complete makeover for the new year, changing about the way he's running his operation, and just sort of hoping that he can fix it all before Rishi.
Absolutely. Now, talking of Brexit, interesting tweet from Michel Barnier today. One of those kind of a bit like the cherries one. Was it the cherries on the cake? Was it kind of a little bit mysterious? Picture of him walking through what looks like, I don't know, could be Regent's Park, I think. Short break from intense negotiations in London. Went looking for level playing fields.
Oh, I mean, honestly, who looks funny? It's so cringe.
I think we've just lost your audio there for a second. We'll come back to Olivia in a moment. We've just lost a little bit. Yeah, so here's this ridiculous tweet, right, which has been put out by Michel Barnier, put out somewhere around about 10 o'clock this morning. Went looking for level playing fields. He seems to be walking through a football pitch in what looks like Regent's Park. I'm pretty sure I can see the post office tower, what used to be called the post office tower, the BT tower now. Olivia's back, I think.
I'm back. Hello.
Yes, good. Sorry. Yeah, so what's it all about?
Yeah, it's just Michel Barnier trying to be funny and trying to appeal to his sort of Remainer friends. His theory is that Britain's trying to get away with too much in the trade talks and isn't playing on a level playing field. I mean, it's all complete rubbish. But, you know, the idea that people are going to find this clever or funny or witty or impressive, I mean, surely just everyone who voted Brexit looks and thinks, thank God we're leaving the EU. This is so cringe and awful. And why are we anything to do with these people?
Yeah, exactly. Right. Yeah. And also, Michel Barnier, as everybody knows, has been pretty unhelpful over the course of time with all the Brexit negotiations that have ever taken place, all going all the way back to when Theresa May was trying to get something out of them, all the way through the current ones and all the way through the last lot.
Yeah, exactly. But actually, I mean, recently, Michel Barnier has been relatively helpful. I mean, it seems to be that there are a few sticky member states who just aren't playing fair at all and are vetoing any form of sensible Brexit. So you've got France complaining about fishing, obviously, and then you've got Spain trying to claim back Gibraltar, which is obviously completely insane. And Michel Barnier seems to be kind of trying to smooth the path because he does want a Brexit deal. He knows that Britain's being pretty reasonable and it's allies who aren't. But now he just tries this stupid game of blaming Britain again, and
I know. Well, you wonder also who he's aiming it at as well, because there must be plenty of people in the European Union who would be quite happy, notwithstanding the fact that they're going to lose money, but they'd be quite happy to get this all over and done with and just get the deal done, move on, and now try and run the European Union without the UK.
Completely. So I think who he's aiming it at is sort of extreme British Remainers like Andrew Adonis,
Jolyon Moron.
Yeah, exactly. All of those weird Brits who would rather we had a terrible trade deal just to sort of prove us wrong. I mean, poor, you'd rather all of your friends and family were poor, you'd rather the country was poorer just because you want to prove a point that you were right in the referendum. Yeah. So I think that's the sort of person it appeals to. But as you say, I don't think it appeals to most Europeans. It definitely doesn't appeal to the vast majority of Brits who just think, glad we're not involved with this bloke anymore.
Yeah. No, I think there's, I mean, aside from those kind of extremists, as you mentioned, there's far more people now, some of whom actually did vote to stay in the European Union, who have totally accepted that we're leaving and that we need to leave and we need to get on with it as soon as possible.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, people are genuinely worried about whether or not we're going to get a trade deal. This genuinely affects a lot of people's actual lives day to day. And if we don't have a deal, then there'll be people all over Europe, not just in Britain, who will be a lot poorer. So sort of trying to make a rubbish little joke out of it really feels like totally tone deaf. It probably goes down pretty well on Twitter, which just had most of the...
Well, Twitter, I should point out this morning, had a hashtag that said RIP Peter Sutcliffe, which I think tells you you need to know about Twitter. But let's talk a little bit about John Lewis, because it is that time of year. I can't believe it's come around so fast. You know, once again, they do a brilliant job of getting everybody talking about them, I have to say that. But I must admit, having looked at the advert now, which for the first time doesn't use a well-worn song, retreaded or whatever, but they use a new song by Celeste, which has been invented just for them. I have to say, I found it pretty cringy.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't really understand it. It just seemed to go all over the place. It seemed to be sort of vacuous platitude after vacuous platitude.
Yes. Well, that's the world, apparently, that we now live in. You know, we have to be kind, unless, of course, you happen to vote Conservative and people think you might be a bit right-wing, in which case you can be as horrible as you like.
Yeah, lots of huge corporations telling you to be kind. And yes. I heard that their plan was to make Christmas not about consumerism.
Right.
Well, I don't think John Lewis are the people to make...
Well, I think there's a lot of truth to that. Yeah, I mean, that's quite a good irony, isn't it? That here we are talking about how to be kind to people without actually spending bucket loads of money. Well, they'd be out of business for a start.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, they're trying to capture the zeitgeist of the country, I suppose, to get people talking about them. But it all feels a little bit cynical and shallow. Also, I just don't think it's very good. I mean, sometimes against my best judgment, I find myself welling up at some very emotional John Lewis adverts. But this one, honestly, I think that
says more about the state you're in than it is about anything else, really, doesn't it?
Yeah, possibly.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the people who think these ads are all lovely and nice and shiny and it makes you just feel all warm and cosy. I mean, I really think they might need to get into some proper actual relationships rather than one with a television advert.
Yeah, that seems quite harsh of me.
There we are. Well, listen, Olivia, thank you very much indeed. Olivia Utley, Deputy Leader Writer at The Sun, with her thoughts on the big stories of the week. Of course, it's been another tumultuous week here at Talk Radio. We've had some more amazing interviews, some more amazing coverage, some more amazing telephone calls. One of the things that we have done this week, and which we will continue to do, is to hear from many of you who have had awful, terrible experiences trying to visit your relatives, elderly relatives who might be in care homes, who might be in sheltered accommodation. It all kind of began a few days ago with a heartfelt call from somebody called Dave in Aberdeen, who said he could not take any more, that he was at the end of his tether, that he didn't want it to go on any longer. And we're still trying to get some help to sort that situation out. We also are going to be talking to some campaigning groups over the course of the next week as well. We're going to keep putting pressure on the government, as indeed is the Daily Mail, who this morning once more have a front page story which says basically that they are going to be trying to find out what it is, that the clamour that cannot be ignored. MPs, charities, doctors and families back our crusade to let relatives visit lonely loved ones in care homes. It's not going to stop this. This is the most important thing, I think, for an awful lot, especially coming up to Christmas. If you imagine that you've got a father or a mother or an elderly brother or sister or a grandfather or a grandmother, and you're coming up to Christmas, and it's all very well looking at the John Lewis ad and welling up, but quite frankly, if you can't see your family members coming up to Christmas, which is only, you know, just a few weeks away, then surely there's something wrong with our society. You know, it's all very well Boris Johnson going on about fixing the oceans and coming up with, you know, ideas for the climate summit in Glasgow next year. But how about you fix the situation where people are allowed to go and see their relatives? Somehow that has to change, doesn't it?
Mid-morning with Mike Graham. Talk Radio. The Independent Republic of Mike Graham on Talk Radio.
It's Friday, it's 12:45, and it's time for this.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Perrier Awards.
Almost full compliance in the air bagging area, but not quite, have to say.
I told them they would have to hand in their resignation if they didn't comply.
Well, there's a lot of it about.
Well, exactly,
I mean, it's the day to do it.
Exactly.
Everyone else is doing
to
it.
To follow the trend.
Friday the 13th.
Yeah.
Here's your chance. Now, we've just worked out together. This is the first one we've done for 3 weeks.
Yeah.
Extraordinary.
Because you went away.
I was away.
And we had
Richard
Madeley
was here.
And we didn't do Paris with him. Because
well, and yet he still bought you champagne and flowers.
He did, yeah. Yeah, he
nice
did.
Nice man.
He's very nice. He's very, very nice. I think maybe if he ever covers for you again, I think perhaps we'll do them then.
Well, he's set the bar very high now. He's going to have to do that every time he comes in.
Well, I hope so.
Yeah.
I mean, I was kind of hoping that when I told you, you would think, oh my goodness,
yeah.
I'm going to have to get her champagne every Friday. No. But that hasn't happened so far.
No, it hasn't. Well, it's only the first really Friday since we've been properly back, because last week we were slightly interrupted by the American election.
We were.
Which still hasn't been decided.
Goodness gracious me. It's been like a week and a half, hasn't it?
Maybe I'll buy you some champagne when they decide who the president is.
That's great. That'll be January, won't it?
New year.
Yay.
Well, we'll have Christmas drinks before that, I'm
well,
sure.
Well, hopefully.
If all goes
hopefully,
well.
Hopefully, if they let us out.
So, anyway, welcome
down.
Back.
Thank you so much. Welcome back, you too as well. Welcome back, everyone.
Everyone.
This is the Perry Rewards. Mm. This is where we look back over the past week of the so-called Independent Republic of Mike Graham on Talk Radio.
Yes.
And choose our favourite moments. As it's tradition, the first one goes to you, Mike. And it's the classic impression of the week. But this week, it's no Meghan. Unfortunately, it's Adam Bolton from Sky News.
Sky News is now ready to declare the winner of the US presidential election of 2020.
That's very funny.
It is very funny, because also that didn't happen really, because there's no winner been declared. So.
Well, that's true. But they've declared the winner. It is confusing. It's hard to figure it out, isn't it?
It is very, very confusing. Also, I find it really funny. North Carolina has been tied since like 2 a.m. on election night, and it still hasn't been decided.
I mean, they really just need a couple of calculators, don't they?
Well, if we manage it here, and you know in Spain we get the results, we get them within like 2 hours of like polls closing. Like, if we manage it, like, guys, maybe, I don't know, get a grip.
I know. It would be better.
Have you got trouble with your screen?
Somebody's telling me to look at the screen. There's nothing on it.
Oh.
I don't know why. I'm not sure what it all means.
Well, I don't know. You should only take orders from me, by the
way. I know.
And I'm here.
And also, because I'm trying to do it with my left hand, which basically is useless. I might as well not have a hand.
Oh, well.
I might as well be an amputee.
It's a bit harsh.
You know.
It's a bit harsh.
But there we are.
Caller Martin Cheshire wins the obvious peril of the week.
They're just sceptics. It doesn't mean they're anti-vaxxer.
Do you know what? It's a natural human feeling. People are concerned. Sorry, the dog's barking.
Right, you'll make the Perriers now.
Prediction of the week.
It's absolutely spot on, though, isn't it? If
you've
got a dog
barking,
you're always going to get on the Perriers.
I love it. And I encourage callers to have the dogs in the background, because I love giving out these Perriers.
Any kind of pet, really.
Yeah, any kind of pet. Parrot.
Yeah. Parrots are good, yeah.
Yeah,
cats.
Those are good. Cats are good. I don't know.
No minks, though. Things.
Earlier in the week, you spoke to travel guru Simon Calder, and you won the Perrier for the question you probably wish you'd never asked.
I think that's very unlikely, but it's something to hope about, and I'm sorry about this noise. Oh, dear, oh, dear.
What is it?
But, I haven't even got to the end of the taxi queue yet. Look at that.
I can't identify that noise. Can you explain what it is?
I think it's something to do with waste disposal. It appears to be coming from a skip. All quite tricky, and they're just a little.
That'd be all those ballots from Pennsylvania getting shredded.
I left that in for entertainment.
And balance as well, because I'm not sure what he meant by waste disposal.
I don't know.
I hope it wasn't anything horrible.
Well, I was...
I'm assuming it was like shredding paper or something.
Yeah, it must have been like a bin lorry.
Yeah.
I guess.
Something like that.
I don't know. We'll never know. Call it Alex in West Sussex wins a Perry for the harsh comment of the week against cyclists.
There's one worse than the courier cyclists who are a law unto themselves. It's those who get on a train in their Lycra with a foldy bike.
Oh, yes.
Oh, my goodness.
Yes.
They are the prize, frankly. What's up? They've got a bike. Cycle in.
That's true.
He makes a good point.
He does. Why put a bike on a train?
Yeah, that's weird, isn't it?
I think so.
I know someone who commutes from Manchester to London. And they cycle to the train station in Manchester, take the bike to London, and then cycle from King's Cross to the place of work.
Dangerous,
Euston.
Dangerous business.
Very dangerous. Anyway, and final caller of this week, Karen in West Yorkshire, makes it to this week's list for becoming the confused caller of the week.
Let's talk to Karen, who's in West Yorkshire. Hi, Karen.
Hello. I said hello, Karen.
Yeah, well,
hello,
listen, don't worry. It happens.
I'm nervous there, I think.
There's a lot of it about that.
There's a lot of it about them, from the confused caller of the week to the confused presenter of the week.
Is that clear? Thank you very much indeed. This is the Independent Republic of Mike Graham, and I approve this message. Let's talk to Robert in Dulwich. Oh, sorry, we've got some news coming up first. Here's Jenny Bogg. I got a bit carried away with my endorsement, I think that's what it was.
You did.
Yeah. Well, it's funnier. Not easy, you know. I have to remember a lot of things.
You do have to remember a lot of things, and especially difficult when people tell you to look at your screen and there's nothing on it.
And there's nothing on it. It's just to confuse me.
It's still nothing like an idiot. On it.
There's still nothing there. I'm still looking at it, though.
We'll never know. What mystery. Now, Mike, your handovers with Ian Collins have become some sort of a must-listen.
They have become a bit surreal of late.
Yeah, I think so. I think so. And that's precisely what we're about to talk about. Obviously, they're not a must-listen because we'll learn what's coming up on Ian's show.
Yes.
Because that almost never comes about. But we get a sneak peek into Ian's life.
Yes.
Now, we know that he loves going to the gym in the mornings. He talks about that a lot on his show, I'm being told. But also, this week, you know, we've moved from this sort of topic from animal chat. You were talking about cows and you were talking about...
Well, mink we did, I think, didn't we?
You did, yes. Yeah. Now, the main topic this week has been slow cookers.
Yes.
I mean, okay. Yesterday, Ian delivered the innuendo of the week.
I think I'd use it once or twice and just it's under the sink
but,
for the rest
I mean,
of the time.
But, I mean, your meat...
Hello? I think that might be an instant Perrier award for you. Anyway.
Your dinner could be cooking away right now.
Could be. Yeah. He walked right into that one.
He did. He's just walked past the studio, by the way.
Right.
He's done this to me.
Is he listening?
I guess so. He must have been listening.
That's good.
But yeah, so you've been talking about slow cookers.
Well, apparently he's bought a slow cooker.
Sandwich makers.
Yeah, well, he bought a slow cooker, and I've never been really that sold on the idea of a slow cooker. I prefer to be in the same house when the cooking's going on.
I know. I think I used to live with someone who had a slow cooker and used it every day.
Yeah.
And
I mean, to me, all you're going to make every day is a stew, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly.
What have you got today? Stew.
Stew, yeah.
What have you got tomorrow? Stew.
Yeah. Could be a different kind of
soup?
Stew.
Maybe some soup? Slow-cooked soup. I mean, you know, there's not much you can slow cook, is there?
No. Apparently, it's really, like, if you make meat with it, like pork, for example, right. Like, it leaves it, like, very tender.
Does it?
Kind of thing, that melting
Yeah, mouth. Like a sort of the belly, a roast belly of pork kind of thing.
Yes.
But you can also do that regularly and cook it just in an oven.
Well, that's what I think.
I don't know. I don't like the idea of leaving things on when I'm out of the house either.
I know.
I'm worried I'm going to come up the stairs and there's going to be a big fire.
Yeah. No, that could happen. You never know.
Well, it could.
You never know. But yeah, keep up the good work.
Thank you very much.
I like your handovers. Okay.
Well, he's been seen walking the wrong way, so maybe he's not going to be here for the handover.
Well, we've got two more pairs to get through.
Very good.
I'm not definitely feeling. No, not at all. We've got two pairs to get through, so hopefully he'll be here by the end of them. Another one for you, Mike. It's the wisdom pill of the week.
Well, that is one of the problems with wearing masks, isn't it? There's a trick to it, which I've sort of worked out, but it doesn't always work. Sometimes I just have to take my glasses off.
That's it. Just take your glasses off.
Just take them off.
Take them off.
But then it's all right if your eyesight is okay.
Yes.
But if you have to wear glasses because your eyesight isn't okay,
yeah,
that's not
tricky.
So good.
I can just about get away with that.
Really?
Because I wear glasses to like read computer screens and read books
But
and
you
stuff.
Can see generally.
Oh, yeah, I can see you now.
Right.
I mean, I would have to squint a little bit.
Told last time I went for an eye test is they say my eyes now will not get any worse.
No.
Because they're now pretty much stuck at where they're going to be for the rest of time.
Well, that's fine, though, because that means that you don't have to change your glasses regularly.
No.
I've been getting texts from some high street place where you can get an eye test.
Oh, yeah.
Nagging me, like, pretty much once a month for the last year.
Is it in Barnard Castle?
Well, no.
No.
I could drive there, though.
You could drive there.
I could drive there. Yeah. I mean, I don't have a driving license to drive
work.
In this country, but hey.
Don't worry about that.
That's
Listen,
fine.
People are breaking all sorts of rules.
Well, exactly. But yes, I've got to go for an eye test. But anyway, I can see in the corner of my eye that Ian's about to get
Ian's
in.
Finally. Yes.
It's the out of context Mike Graham.
I'm sitting in here on my own, believe it or not. You know, nobody wants to come in here with me. I can't blame them, you know.
I mean.
I think that was in the sense of in a kind of isolation, wasn't it? So that I'm not spreading anything to anybody.
Yeah, no, yeah. I mean, but it's funnier without
it
context.
It is funnier without
And also,
context.
You keep the aircon very cold in here.
It is very cold.
It is very cold.
I prefer it cold, though.
I know.
Like
Next
that.
Week, I'll just bring like a blanket, like a fluffy throw or something.
Yes, okay. I'll look
that.
Forward to that.
I'll do that then.
Thank you very much indeed.
Well, thank you. That's all for the Perrier Awards. There'll be more next week.
The Perrier Awards on Talk Radio.
Radio across the UK, online, on DAB, and on your smart speaker. The Independent Republic of Mike Graham on Talk Radio.
If you enjoyed that, be sure to catch the whole show 10 to 1 Monday to Friday on Talk Radio via DAB online or via the Talk Radio app. And if you have an opinion on the stories we cover, we'd love to hear from you. Call us on 0344 499 1000 or tweet at Talk Radio during the show to have your say.
Mid-morning with Mike Graham. Talk Radio.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.